Renaissance Theatre, page 102. The Human Condition. During the Renaissance, the concept of drama was to change completely. Through their multifaceted heroes and heroines, the dramatists of the age, led by Christopher Marlowe and then William Shakespeare, began to explore the many sides of human nature. The plays also explored various stages of England's history, the nature of power, and what made a good or a bad ruler or government. Marlowe is the first great playwright in English. His most significant play is probably Dr. Faustus, which is almost an allegory of the humanist revolution. Faustus is pact with the devil, to whom he promises his soul in return for unlimited power and knowledge, can be seen as a metaphor both for the humanist idea of man breaking free of religious control and for England's political break with the Roman Catholic Church. Although the play ends with Faustus's penitence, it's the theme of man independently choosing his own fate that remains its strongest element. Shakespeare's literary achievement is unprecedented and has arguably never been equaled in its originality or range of concerns. Ben Jonson famously said that Shakespeare's art was not of an age but for all time. According to the American critic Harold Bloom, all previous and subsequent Western literature, in some way, is in his shadow. It's difficult to say exactly what separates Shakespeare from almost all other writers. It's partly a question of his all-inclusiveness, the fact that his plays explore all aspects of human life and represent all levels of society. He's also the first writer to consider the great problems of existence independently of pre-existing model of thought and belief. The Elizabethan Theatre. Before the theatre, there were troops of professional actors or travelling players who toured around giving public performances. Their performances were staged on movable platforms, often in town squares or inn yards. This changed, first of all, with court interludes, plays which were usually performed for a small elite court, and then with the establishment of proper theatres. The first permanent theatre was erected in 1576 by James Burbage in Shoreditch, just outside the city of London. It was called simply The Theatre. Permanent theatres were usually circular or polygonal. Around the theatre walls there were three rows of galleries. Three seats were quite expensive, and this was where the richer people sat. The lower classes stood in the centre and paid much less. The actors performed on a stage which projected out into the standing audience. The production of plays. Elizabethans didn't use scenery, but gave great importance to costume. Often costumes were not realistic or historically accurate, but they were highly elaborate. It's important to remember that until 1660, women weren't allowed to act in plays, and female roles were generally taken by boys. This is reflected in the frequent use of disguise in plays of the period. Female characters in Shakespeare's comedies, for example, often dress up as men so that they can access spaces from which women are excluded and speak in a way that would normally have been impossible for a woman. In Shakespeare's As You Like It, for example, the protagonist Rosalind disguises herself as a boy in order to find out if her boyfriend Orlando really loves her. Both in speech and gesture, acting in the Renaissance was more formal than modern acting. It was also closely related to a branch of contemporary education known as rhetoric. Elizabethan students were taught rhetoric as a form of creative composition and persuasive argument, and appropriate gestures were part of the subject. The Globe. The most famous theatre of the time was the Globe Theatre, which was built in London in 1599 on the south bank of the Thames. Like the other theatres of this period, the Globe was an open-air theatre without lights, which meant that performances had to take place in the daytime. There was no stage curtain and very few props, objects or pieces of furniture used in a play, and the action moved from scene to scene without a break. When the theatre was full, the players were surrounded by the audience on three sides. This meant that the relationship between actor and audience was more intimate than in modern theatres. The fact that there were very few props also meant that the audiences had to imagine the setting of the play for themselves, unlike modern productions, where vast amounts of money and effort are often spent on the construction of elaborate sets. In 1613, the original Globe Theatre burnt down. Apparently a cannon shot during a performance of Henry VIII ignited the thatched roof, made of straw, of the gallery. Construction began on the original foundations, and the new Globe was completed before Shakespeare's death. The new Globe continued operating as a theatre until 1642, when it was closed down by the Puritans, as were all the theatres and any places of entertainment. In 1644, the Globe was burnt down in order to create space for houses. In 1949, after his first visit to London, the idea of rebuilding Shakespeare's Globe came to the American actor, director and producer Sam Wanamaker. It took 23 years to find a suitable piece of land, get planning permission and raise the money to build it. Wanamaker died in 1993, while the building was still under construction, but 3.5 years later the theatre was successfully completed. The new Globe was built near the site of the old Globe. Working with the architect Theo Crosby, the Shakespeare's Globe Trust did a lot of research to make the new theatre as faithful to the original as possible. Techniques used in the reconstruction were extremely accurate, using the same type of original wood, green oak.